At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's E-V-A-L-Y-N-N-E, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hello, welcome to Autistic Voices. And this week's guest is a wonderful lady by the name of Holly Wincote. Holly is a hypnotherapist and she's also a therapist in IEMT, which stands for Integral Eye Movement Therapy. She's a trainer, she's a stress management consultant, and she's also a clinical supervisor for other therapists like me. And that's how we met. I went on some brilliant training. It was actually about eating disorders, and Holly was the facilitator of that. It's her own course, and it was brilliant. And I then asked her to be my supervisor. And I'm really pleased to have her on the show, and I'm going to introduce her in a second. I just wanted to point out to my listeners that Holly isn't on the show because she's my supervisor. She's my supervisor because she's Holly and she's absolutely brilliant. And we're going to talk about anxiety today. So welcome to the show, Holly.
Thank you, Evelyn. And hi, it's lovely to speak to you again. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's lovely to have you here. And I don't know if you've been listening to previous shows, but I like to start with gratitude. So I was just going to ask, what are you grateful for today?
I'm grateful today for my family. And also, when I looked out of the window this morning, the sun was shining. And I thought, it makes everything look so beautiful. So I'm really grateful for a sunny day. And then also my first cup of coffee, because it always gets me going, and especially on a lovely sunny day like today. So that's what I'm grateful for today.
It's funny because I'm grateful today for sunshine as well, but I'm also grateful for the shade. And it made me think about life and mental health and how sometimes life, we're in the sunshine and things are glowing really brightly and the colours are vibrant and things are feeling good. And other times we're in the shade and things are a bit cooler and not as shiny. And I think we do need both in our lives, difficult though that is to accept sometimes. So sunshine and shade is my symbolic gratitude of the day. So tell listeners about yourself. Obviously, I've given you a brief introduction.
Okay, so I'm Holly. I've been married to my husband, Paul, for about 15 years now. I live on the outskirts of Sheffield, so quite close to the city centre, but also quite close to the countryside. I've also got three older brothers who are great, and being the youngest of the four, they're quite protective of me. They help me lots, which is really lovely. And their wives, my lovely sisters-in-law. My husband's parents, I've sadly lost both my parents now, although I did have some great times with them when they were around. And this meant also that I've become even closer to my husband's parents. And they're really supportive, really, really fabulous people. And in terms of what do I like to do when I'm not working? So I guess my favourite hobby is snowboarding. And I try to do that every winter. It's good exercise. It's absolutely fantastic scenery, beautiful, really, really beautiful environment. And then other times I like cycling. And especially, as I said, living quite close to the countryside and growing up in the countryside, I really enjoy walking, you know, just exploring, just enjoying the beauty. And as I said, I love the sun, so I like sitting in the sun as well. And then in my professional life, my time's divided, as you said earlier, Evelyn, between being a therapist and also training other therapists who just want additional training in specialist subjects. So as a qualified therapist, I work with adults and young people, and I work with neurotypical people mostly. So I work with people who want a bit of a helping hand. For example, you know, if they're struggling with something and they just want to make some changes. And I was thinking about what's the best way to put this. And I thought probably it's for people who want to feel better and more positive about themselves and their lives. And the therapies that I use are hypnotherapy and eye movement therapy, integral eye movement therapy, and also NLP, which stands for neuro-linguistic programming. So they're just all therapies which include things to help people to make those changes. And then the training work that I do is providing 1 and 2 day courses for other therapists, as I said, who want to specialize in a particular area. So things like anxiety and phobias, stress, just to name a few. And as I used to be a trainer before I was a therapist, it's a really good way of putting my skills to use and just sharing my passion and my knowledge for therapy with other people. So that's a little bit about myself.
Well, an absolutely lovely, you know, introduction. That's really nice. And although I know you as a trainer and I know you as my supervisor, I did not know that you liked snowboarding. So that's brilliant, because I can't imagine, I can't imagine snowboarding just simply because I think I'd be rubbish at it. And I don't think I'd be able to keep my balance, Holly. I think I'd be all over the place.
I don't think I'm particularly good at it either, but, you know, it's fun. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I'm good or not. It's fun.
I think I'd just be dangerous. The one time that I went on a sledge in the snow, I went down a hill so fast and there was a toddler just playing in the snow and he ended up on my knee on the sledge going really fast down a hill into a bush. And that's when I realised that probably that kind of activity isn't the best for me. But I bet it's very exhilarating. So thank you for that introduction. So why is it that you chose to work with people to, as you put it, help their lives feel better and more positive?
Yeah, okay. I think I've always been interested in how the mind works and how we can find ourselves in situations and, you know, we're not feeling too good about it. It's circumstances, it's things that we've been taught, things that we've learned. It's life. Okay.
Yeah.
And I've always been interested in well, how do we make ourselves feel better? What's our mind about? And for me, when I kind of discovered hypnotherapy, I just thought, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And why I actually do it now that I've when I qualified and I'm able to do it, people who come and see me, and I'm sure you're the same, Evelyn, they often say that they've been having problems for a long time. And when we work with them, it's really wonderful to help them to empower themselves and see the changes that they make. And in fact, people often say that they'd wish that they'd done it years ago. And I remember one lovely mum saying to me that when I've been working with their child, with the mum's child, I remember the mum saying to me, I wish they taught this kind of thing in schools, because it's quite simple often. Although it takes hard work, it's just so empowering and it really, really helps people. So it probably sounds a bit of a cliche, but it's true. I really enjoy it and it's absolutely fantastic. It's so rewarding for me to see people and be part of that, to help them to make those changes and just to feel better.
I absolutely agree with you there. I mean, I can't agree more. It's a wonderful feeling being able to help people to feel better than they were feeling, even if it's marginal, isn't it? And I'm the same as you. I absolutely love doing that. And, you know, I just think it's wonderful. And we're going to talk a bit, we're going to play some music now, but we're going to talk a bit about after the break about anxiety in particular.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, welcome back to Autistic Voices. I'm Evelyn Charmer and my guest this week is the lovely Holly Wincote. And we've been talking a little bit about Holly's life and her love of snowboarding and the fact she does hypnotherapy and integral eye movement therapy and NLP with all sorts of people, children, young people and adults. So Holly, welcome back. Can I ask, I know that I have, but have you seen an increase in children and young people needing therapeutic support for anxiety?
Thanks, Evelyn. Yes, as you said, you know you have. I have too, yes. I've seen over the last few months and over the last couple of years when I've been able to, in the times when I've been able to work with people, there's definitely been an increase in both in children and young people and adults as well, presenting anxiety, experiencing anxiety, absolutely. So over the last couple of years, especially, everyone's been affected in some way by the COVID-19 pandemic. Everyone knows about it from very young ages, you know, and up to adults and adults as well. So everyone's been affected by it in some way. And because of this, during the pandemic, we've had to go through many changes. Everyone has had to go through many changes, you know, particularly at school. The schools were closed for a long time. People had to have lessons online or no lessons. And then when the schools went back, they were open for a while. And then if someone contracted the virus, then they were closed again, or the whole class had to go home. So there's been a lot of changes. People have also lost people. People have passed away, and young people, that can be particularly anxiety provoking for young people. And so lots of changes, and lots of changes can make people feel unsure. Mm-hmm. So when something's normal, when something's how it is, it gives us a sense of safety, and especially with young people. So lots of changes can make people feel unsure about the present, about the future. They don't know what's going to happen because it's constantly changing. And so what that does is it can take away that feeling of safety, and this can cause people to be anxious.
Yeah. As you know, I work predominantly with neurodivergent children and young people and young adults. And I was working in a school as an assistant head and head of safeguarding throughout that pandemic. And I think you're absolutely right across the board that people do really need a level of routine and predictability in order to feel safe. And it's not just about the fact that I know that when I was working in the school, for example, each time there was a lockdown, we had to review and do everything differently to the time before. So children were getting used to one thing and then we were changing it again. And I'm sure all schools had to do that for various reasons. You had to adapt to people being off sick and whether you could have people in and whether you merged classes and whether you did things the same or you had half days. So the timetables were always changing. And the school I worked in was for SEN, children and young people. And some of them were fine with that and kind of adapted really well and surprised themselves. But some just couldn't cope with it at all. So there was a real spectrum of response to that. But anxiety was definitely high amongst staff, amongst parents, amongst children. And one of the things I think was an impact as well was that the whole pandemic thing being such a massive shock to society, it instilled a huge amount of fear in us. Fear of each other, fear of the disease, fear of death, fear of this never going away, things never being the same. And for a lot of people, children or adults, even going out of their safe haven of home, and even now, it could be massive. That's a massive deal for quite a lot of people. And like you said, people died. People knew people who died. People lost relatives who they never got to see and say goodbye to. And I think the impact on us as social animals who need to be around, you know, in the main, we like to have interaction with others, even if it's on a low level for some people, was really interrupted, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good point about the interaction, actually. I hadn't mentioned that.
Yeah.
Is that people, you mentioned about routine and how that makes people feel safe. And then if people don't feel safe, then they feel fearful. And the interaction as well, it's really important part of sort of having a good mental health, you know, having a healthy well-being, effective well-being, is having that support from other people. So absolutely, when the interaction with other people is greatly minimized, then that also is bad for people. It's not good for people. It's not helpful because they don't have that support that they need. And people, of course, everyone was just doing their best. Everyone was trying their best.
Of course. And I think if you're a child and something is, I remember when I was a child and the threat of nuclear war came up. So I'm relating it to that, I guess, for my own experience, for those that are, you know, of a certain age will remember that. Mm. And it was terrifying. And so I think for children who have never had a threat to the whole of us, you know, or a threat to the planet like that. And a lot of our children these days are really aware of the threat of climate change and things like that and the oceans and stuff. But to have this pandemic that could do damage to us as a race, on every level was terrifying. And I think the other thing about that as well was that it stopped people touching each other. We stopped having physical contact with each other.
That's absolutely right. And whilst as therapists, you know, we're very mindful of that in terms of just the ordinary, that, you know, the general, the normal, if you like, way of being, is that that helps to soothe people. It helps people to feel safe. It helps people to feel valued and loved.
Yeah.
And absolutely agree with you that that loss of physical contact has also, it had a really big impression on people.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, all of this, we know that, you know, I know the basics anyway, that all of this, what it does is it tells the brain that there's something to fear all of the time. So then we overproduce our survival chemicals and hormones. So we overproduce cortisol, which can make us very tense. because cortisol freezes your muscles, sends all your blood to your major organs. It's a survival thing. So when a rabbit runs across the road, the first thing it does is freeze. And then the adrenaline kicks in, which makes it move. And that's the cortisol effect. So an overproduction constantly of cortisol and adrenaline is also really damaging, because your brain then is producing these fear-based survival chemicals. So your body goes into survival mode, which then tells the brain to go into survival mode. And it's a constant cycle, you know, overproduction of certain stress hormones. So the impact it can have on someone's life. I mean, I've seen people, I see a lot of children, young people actually, who just cannot go into school now, or have always struggled with that. And now it's really compounded. I work with a lot of children, young people who just get really engaged in gaming and online stuff, but cannot bring themselves to leave the house or to go and meet friends in the park or ride the bike. Mm-hmm. So what sort of impact, does it have on the people's lives that you work with therapeutically?
I think, as you mentioned, Evelyn, one of the biggest things is fear. So people who are anxious, and you described it really well, Len, thank you, in terms of people who are in this, when people have anxiety, they're in this survival mode, and basically everything else takes a back seat. So it's just about surviving, as yes. you said. And because the fear comes with that, this emotion, which is really, really difficult for people to cope with, then often what happens is people start to do things to try and avoid feeling that fear. So you mentioned about people not being able to go to school, and that's a good example of people avoiding something which causes them to feel that fear or that anxiety.
Yes.
Because when they avoid something that makes them feel that way, they don't feel it. So it's the person's way of coping with it.
Can I just interject as well? Sorry, Holly, but just while we're on that, I've also experienced young people who struggle to go to school because on some level they're worried about what might happen to a parent or carer if they're not there, or they can't see them. And being away from home causes them such high levels of anxiety about what might or might not be happening at home to that person or to their family members, that it's just too much. And so they'd rather be somewhere they can have eyes on and know that their parent, carers, family members are close.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, people not going to school, and people might have heard of it called separation anxiety. Absolutely. And that's definitely one of the ways that anxiety is manifested. You mentioned that people have lost people, that people have died during the pandemic. And so young people can often become really worried, just as you said, about if they're not there. You know, they have this sense of, well, if I'm there, I can stop something from happening. And for a young person, it's overwhelming, because perhaps at that age, they haven't got the skills to be able to cope in the same way that an adult has. And especially for neurodivergent as well, as you said, the stress, the anxiety chemicals, the survival chemicals are more prevalent than what they're there in more quantities. So separation anxiety is another one. People are doing what they can to cope. So what happens is people will find these other ways of coping. And some of these things might include stress, which comes out in anger or sadness or frustration.
Yes.
They feel overwhelmed as well. I'm sure you've seen that. People feel overwhelmed if they are trying to sort things out. And especially, you know, you were saying about the separation anxiety. If a young person is taking it on themselves to protect, so to speak, their loved ones, it's just too overwhelming. So people have fear, they have stress, they might have, you know, emotional outbursts of anger or sadness. Sometimes people develop phobias because if you continue to avoid something, it reinforces the message to your brain that that is something to be feared. It is something to be avoided. So people can therefore develop phobias as well of things. And then also there, sometimes people will cope with it through food, either by restricting food because it gives them a sense of control. Sometimes by overeating. So people might have episodes of binge eating just to sort of make themselves feel better, because a temporary sugar high makes people feel better. But then, of course, when it drops again, they feel worse again. People might just be having emotions, like we said, crying. And then sometimes people do it through smoking or alcohol. And often there's also a sense of grief or loss. So there are lots and lots of different ways that people cope with anxiety. And it's the brain is doing its best. It's doing its best to help us. But unfortunately, often these ways aren't helpful in a long-term basis.
We're going to listen to go to the ads and listen to your second song of choice.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer from Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited, and I'm speaking today to Holly Wincote from atherapy.co.uk and the Hypnotherapy Academy. So welcome back, Holly.
Thank you.
If you want to, if anything's affecting you in the show or you want to have your say, please get in touch with me via the show, or you can contact Holly, Holly at atherapy, atherapy.co.uk, and we can continue the conversation. You can also message us through Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn. So we've been talking about stress, we've been talking about anxiety and how the current times have really exacerbated that for a number of us, and the ways that that can manifest. And Holly and I have been talking about social anxiety, and Holly mentioned about overwhelm. Now, overwhelm is something that is, you know, is stress, basically. And I think it's a really important thing to talk about openly with each other, because I think we all can experience overwhelm. The way I kind of describe it to people, I remember having a parent say to me, I dropped a pen and I absolutely lost the plot. What's wrong with me? Mm. And I said, well, let's look at everything else that's been going on underneath that. So there's always loads of stuff underneath, a bit like a volcano where there's, you know, your bucket becomes full, your volcano is ready to erupt, and it can be the tiniest thing that sets that off. It's not about the pen. It's about everything that's rumbling under the surface. I sometimes with families get that game out. I don't know if you remember it, Holly, from the 70s. It was called Buckaroo. And a way of demonstrating anxiety, stress and overwhelm, I think, is to play that game, because you're putting pieces on the donkey. Once it's got enough stuff there, you put the smallest piece on and the whole thing explodes. And I think it's a really, I call it your Buckaroo moment. So, you know, and it happens to everybody. And I think it can creep up on us, and that you use that word control. So how do you cope when you're feeling anxious or stressed? You've talked at the beginning of the show, and I thought it was a lovely way to start. You do things like snowboarding must be brilliant for managing stress and anxiety. And you said about loving nature. I'm also a massive fan of walking and being outdoors. But what other things might you do to help you to keep your stress to a level?
So as a hypnotherapist, obviously, I've learned a lot about myself as well on my journey. And what I tend to do is I have, as well as doing activities, thinking about, you started today, Evelyn, with things that you're grateful for. And it's really good to think about positive things. So it's not all about ignoring all the negative things, but it's putting us into a place where we can cope with the more negative things, the more difficult things that we have to cope with. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that activity. And absolutely, activity is great. And it doesn't have to be going to the gym or, you know, anything too strenuous. It's just about things that help you to feel happy, help you to feel good and calm and relaxed.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the fight or flight kind of survival hormones that our body produces, namely adrenaline and cortisol. And when you do activities that make you feel good, we're releasing endorphins and dopamine, aren't we?
Yeah.
And feel good pheromone.
That's right. And the great thing about it is that the way that the nervous system works and the brain is that it's actually an impossibility to be stressed and relaxed at the same time.
Yes.
You just can't be it. So by doing things that help you to feel happy, relaxed, feel good, that switches off that stress response. And the more that we practice it, the better we become at it. Just like anything, learning to tie your shoelaces, anything else you've learned to do, the more you practice it, the better you become at it. And so you are able to, when you do have stress and anxiety, instead of it overwhelming you, you're able to switch into your calm, relaxed mode. So as well as activities, I also have a little routine that I do that's very quick, and you can do it anywhere. And I might talk about this a little bit more later, I think. So I just use something called self-hypnosis, and it's just where you do some slow, focused breathing. Think about a favorite relaxing place, because you can't always get up and go out and be there. So just think about it. Smile, because smiling helps to release those endorphins as well. And then just say some calm and reassuring words to myself. Mm. So activity and also just having, you know, a little routine to do. And the more you practice, the more you become effective at being able to switch on the calmness when you need it.
I like that, switch on the calmness. I sometimes do a group hypnosis called Switch Your Anxious Brain Off for families, and they can listen in. It's free. There's a few on YouTube. So if anyone's interested in that, let me know. I haven't done any since New Year, and maybe it's something if people want to do, I will happily do them again because they're lovely. And like Holly said, it's around self-hypnosis. It's not about anything other than getting your mind into a relaxed and happy place. Now, there's some really interesting research. The body responds in the same way to something that you think than something as something actually happening, so, which is why we can be in fear when there's nothing actually happening. We can watch a horror film, or we can go on a scary ride, or we can do something that creates that kind of adrenaline rush, as people call it, or we can watch that on a video, and actually the body will react in the same ways as if you were doing it for real. Now, because of that, we can actually then train our brains to think more positive, helpful, happy thoughts, and the body will react as though those things are really happening. So like you said, you don't have to be able to go to a wonderful place. You can sit at your desk, you can sit in the laundrette, you can be in the supermarket, or in your car, or on a bus, or in school. And you can just take a couple of moments, can't you, to just take some, you know, nice, slow breathing and just imagine and take your mind to a place that you really enjoy. Your brain will release those feel-good chemicals we were talking about, like dopamine and endorphins. And that's self-hypnosis.
Mm. And some people don't like to use the word hypnosis.
Yeah, I don't like to use it either, and I'm a hypnotherapist, but I think it's because it's quite old-fashioned and people think that it's something it's not.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we could talk about that all day. Can I ask you then, and I wouldn't normally do this, but you are my clinical supervisor, so I talk to you a lot. And for those that don't know, when you're a qualified therapist, it's a legal requirement and it's an ethical requirement to have supervision. So that means I meet with Holly online once a month, and without giving away people's identities and being careful about what I share, she helps me and we talk things through so that it's good practice. And that I can reflect on my work as a therapist with her. And I find that super helpful. But can you feedback to me, Holly, and our listeners about the work you observe me doing with children, young people who are neurodivergent, possibly the autistic young people I work with?
Yes. And I think one of the key things there, Evelyn, is that you mentioned that it's confidential, so you never give people's identities away. So we're talking about the work that you do with a view to helping you to do it to the absolute best of your abilities, so without giving people's identities away. And what I've noticed for, and as a qualified supervisor, obviously there are certain things that we look out for. And what I've noticed, Evelyn, is that you work with neurodivergent people, and this takes specialist training, which you've had, because there are things to consider. And you always demonstrate understanding. So understanding that each person is an individual. And you provide a safe space for people to work through their problems, to reflect, to talk about things. It's completely non-judgmental as well. So when people come to you, it's a non-judgmental and safe space. And you encourage them that they are individuals. So they aren't defined by their neurodivergence. They're valued, important people. And you encourage them to come to their own realizations. So using their own inner resources, their own experiences, whilst at the same time supporting them with perhaps fresh ideas, you know, something that they might not have considered, so that they have choices. So that they're able to reflect on things themselves, they're able to talk to you in a safe way, and you can support them through their journey, if you like, of coming to new understandings, and whether they want to make changes or not. Because sometimes people don't. Sometimes people will become aware of things, but they don't want to do something. So you're helping them to come to their own conclusions. That's what I've observed.
Thank you very much. I'm blushing at the other end of the radio. Yeah, that's really lovely of you. And it's a funny question to ask. I feel quite, you know, like, oh, but you know, modest about it. But at the same time, I think I can sort of think about what I think I'm doing. But for listeners out there who might be considering a you know, specialist therapy for their neurodivergent children or young people, I think it's important to hear from someone else what you've observed. So I really appreciate that. Although it's uncomfortable, I find it quite uncomfortable hearing such lovely praise. But thank you. I'm hoping that that's what I do for people. And I think the key word for me is about choices. And I'm a great believer in people having choices. And I think what we've talked about throughout the show, and obviously we've talked a lot about the pandemic, and rightly so, it took away a lot of our choices, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that in our sessions together, in our supervision sessions, we've talked about working with instinct and intuition as a therapist.
Yes.
Is it all right if I just say something about that?
Yes, please do.
Am I rushing the gun a little bit?
No, you're not rushing the gun. I mean, the thing is, I do work very instinctively and intuitively, as well as having a kind of bag of tools, if you like, therapy tools that I use. I am very person-centered and go, like you said, very individual with what I do. And I do wonder what you think the value of that is for you.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. So there are lots of different therapies and lots of different therapy approaches, and each of them are absolutely fantastic in their own right. And the one of the ways that we work is with instinct and intuition. So as you said, Evelyn, you have a toolkit, you've got your training, you've got your skills, you've got your experience. And then when it comes to mental health, well, any issue, I guess, I think the thing that we remember so is that each person is an individual. Each person has their own thoughts, their own unique feelings, their own unique perceptions and experiences. And this is what kind of puts us together as a person. So as a therapist, if we allow each person to be and express their individual self, then what we do is when we work with them, we work with the problem as they see it. So we work with what's presented in the sessions. And what that does is it enables the person to come to these realizations and choices and make changes at their own pace, in their own way. And this is really, really empowering for the person. It's not us having a prescribed way of working, having a set way of this is what we're going to do. It's being able to work in the moment with the person and respond to those person's unique thoughts and feelings. And we often say no one knows ourselves better than ourselves. So it enables the person working with instinct and intuition. You're using all the skills and experience and the training that underpin what you're doing, but you're working with the person as an individual and with what they bring, which is really, really empowering for them.
Yeah, absolutely. When I'm training therapists, I use that a lot, that word empowering, because you can disable people from being able to be the experts in their own lives. And I would say therapy isn't something that you have done. You know, you can go and get your hair done.
Yeah.
But therapy isn't something you have done. Therapy is something you collaborate with someone on. So it's about meeting halfway. I feel like I meet the person where they're at. They meet me where I'm at. We work together. I think that's the beauty of it. And it's different every time. So, you know, one thing might work with one person and it's not going to work with the next person. And that's why I like what you said about, you know, we're not going to just, you can have a set of these are the things you learn. You're not going to just use them, whatever the outcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've given us your top tips for managing anxiety. I think you talked about
activity.
You've talked about doing things you enjoy.
Yes.
Breathing, self-hypnosis, and being in nature. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we close the show today?
No, I think just to remember to just say positive things to yourself, because like you said earlier, Evelyn, the brain reacts in the same way whether you think something as to whether you actually do it. So if you just keep saying things to yourself, you know, but have belief in yourself, I'm calm, I'm relaxed, I'm okay. And the more you say it, the more helpful it is.
Thank you. I mean, you know, what we're not saying that being relaxed is going to, you know, going to take all of life's issues and problems away and solve things. People are in debt, people worry about housing, all sorts of things. But stress is a killer. Stress can really impact on your life in ways that are just so debilitating and disabling, as I said earlier, that really to be able to get through life's difficulties and be able to work through those shady parts of our lives back into the sunshine, we, you know, it's far better for us to navigate that if we're feeling less anxious and stressed.
Yes.
And I'm sure we could have had a whole show talking about integral eye movement therapy, which I find fascinating. So maybe we'll get you on to talk about that another time.
Brilliant.
Yes. And if anyone's interested in Holly's work, please look at her website, www.atherapy.co.uk. Or if you're a therapist and you're interested in her training or supervision, you can have a look at the Hypnotherapy Academy.
Yes, it's www.thehypnotherapyacademy, which is all one word, and then .co.uk.
Well, thank you very much for being on Autistic Voices this week, and have a lovely day.
Oh, thanks. Thanks ever so much, Evelyn, for having me. It's been really, really wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Sharma. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.